Our full week's coverage from Katowice, Poland. You can go to democracynow.org. And if you want to see Democracy Now! Attempting to question the U.S. representatives at these climate talks, go to democracynow.org. You can read the transcripts as well as the audio, video transcripts and podcasts. And to see Greta Thunberg give her plenary address, the 15-year-old climate activist, go to democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
Happy holidays from Two Raw Radio. Thanks for spending the holiday season with us here at WHFR.FM. Origix, sending out positive vibes to you and yours.
Every day, hundreds of college radio stations take to the air. College radio changes the lives of those who are involved with it and can change those who listen to it too.
College radio means finding yourself. It helped me find what I wanted to do in not only school but in life.
So support college radio by continuing to listen to this station and supporting the students who make it happen. College radio, now, more than ever. A message brought to you by this station and the College Radio Foundation. For more information, please visit collegeradio.org.
Tune in every Thursday evening from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. on 89.3 WHFR.FM for The Music Soulbox with sassy, sultry, and soulful R&B music. So join me, Sunny D, right here on the station, making waves.
Listener-supported non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn, featuring local and independent artists.
The following program has been pre-recorded. The views and opinions expressed on the new WHFR Journal are those of the hosts, producers, and guests, not necessarily those of WHFR, its licensee, Henry Ford College, or its Board of Trustees. Enjoy.
Welcome to the WHFR Journal. I'm Susan McGraw, along with Alan Mazurek, and we say happy holidays to you in this, our first of many holiday editions, because 'tis the season, Alan, isn't
it? Indeed. It's great to be in the studio here. Obviously, a lot of the students have left for the holiday break, but while the mice are away, I guess the cats will play, right?
Absolutely, we'll have some fun with it. And I miss being in here with you as well. And we look forward to some great programming moving forward into the new year. I have to say, just a couple of simple updates on sort of some things that happened in 2018.
Yes.
Number one, our new president, Russell Cavalluna. Most of the campus is embracing him very strongly, and he seems to be a good listener, and he seems to be getting some things done, and at least in the short term, I can't ask for anything more in a president. So we look forward to getting past the honeymoon phase, but so far so good. So many things going on with the holiday season, and
indeed,
we want people to be safe and happy and healthy and enjoy whatever makes your holiday season sparkle and shine. But we can't ignore the fact that during this season, oftentimes we can have some thoughts of depression, of anxiety, and it's a no wonder with all the crazy media shouting things at us about buy this and you have to do this and this table needs to be perfect and all those kinds of things, and top that off with perhaps an issue of loss this season or something that's different than what you're used to over the holiday years. Times can be tough, no doubt about it. I think it's always relevant and very important to know that you have resources available. So should you have a need, should you have just a desire to talk something out with someone, that's the way to go. And I'm just going to just toss out there the suicide prevention hotline, because
sure,
it is, you never know when you're going to need it. And when you do, it's got to be right there, because sometimes that quick decision can save a life. Here's the number. It's 1-800-273-8255. Again, 1-800-273-8255. We sometimes have people in to talk about some of the different anxieties associated with the holidays, but I think, Alan, our listeners probably can relate to many of the things that are pretty consistent from, you know, from family to family, person to person. It's not always easy getting together with a group of people that maybe you don't see every day, and then mm-hmm. you have to kind of fit some type of a role or something. Not to mention that times are tough for certainly many people in our listening audience. So keep that number handy, and should you need to refer it to someone else, please go ahead and do so.
Absolutely. And of course, yes, if you're, you know, feeling alone over the holidays, try to find, you know, people, number one, people that you can connect to or other services that are available in the community so that you don't feel, you know, so alone at what most of us would look at as a relatively festive time of year as well. Speaking of trying to put things on a positive note, here's something that came across our screen a couple of weeks ago that comes from the Press and Guide, which is a program taking place at Annapolis High School in Dearborn Heights. It's a group of girls, juniors and seniors, who have put together a program which promotes what they call restroom positivity, creating a safe space. For girls at Annapolis High School is what that these girls in the leadership class at Annapolis High School came up with, and we certainly commend them for it. It's a project that they presented to school board members at the end of November. Seniors Brianna Carr, Kayla Collier, juniors Megan Koska, and Alexa Raymond asserted that based on research and based on you know what they've learned happens day to day at the high school level, that high school girls are faced with depression, anxiety, low self-esteem, and stress, and need a safe haven in school that is not a place which is filled with either negative graffiti or bullying, which of course is a major issue. So they found that 98% of girls feel pressured by society to look a certain way. They found that almost 3/4 of girls feel pressured to present a pleasurable appearance to other people, and that you know more than 90% of them wanted to change an aspect of their appearance, with weight being the most common issue that most teenage girls have dealt with. Their response to that issue was to create a place where, you know, girls would be able to go and be in a supportive environment. And, you know, yeah, it's at some point, I think we've all kind of needed to find that space to run away and go somewhere that we felt safe. And they felt that they would start by creating, you know, a positive environment in the girls' restrooms.
I think it's a wonderful, wonderful idea. How many times even going into restrooms, even at the college level, and you see a girl crying in the corner, you see one friend trying to console another friend, and it's not the most comfortable environment. But so, too, you don't want to do these things in public. You don't want to do them in the hallway, or you can't step outside easily and so on. So I think particularly at the high school level, these simple changes can make a huge impact on young women, and providing an opportunity for them to just step out, whether they have to step out and have some alone time, or they want to sort of communicate with a friend or someone that can help sort of make them feel a little bit better in that moment of crisis. Because face it, you know, we're no longer in the teenage years, right, Alan, but and looking back 30 years ago, those things maybe didn't seem like such a big deal. But boy, when you're in the thick of it, these are big issues, and not to be taken lightly. And issues like anxiety and depression, those are also very serious, and we know that so many of our young people today are battling that. So this is a really strong, proactive approach to making a safe space and a comfortable environment for our young women.
Well, it's a very positive step to number one, recognize the issue, and then also to try to find a way to help to address it. And as we know in this day and age, and this is probably different than when you and I were in high school, you know, that pressure, that bullying, the things that you feel, they don't end when you leave school now, because it's just a part of the social media environment that everybody deals with. So even, you know, at school, even in those moments, that kind of, you know, ability to be in a to feel like you're in a nurturing environment. So the idea is, like I said, to have, you know, positive messages on the walls, you know, to just sort of, you know, everyone agree that this is a neutral space where, you know, everybody's allowed to feel safe and be who they are. It's a tremendous idea, and obviously hats off to these girls for creating
it. I think that's what makes it very, very special, is the fact that it was the young women that discovered this concept, and that the fact that they can make a difference, and rather than just talking about it, they're actually taking action.
Well, and when you read the article in the Press and Guide, and it is there for our listeners, you'll understand that these young ladies definitely did their research too. Mm. They were able to identify, as I mentioned, and brought out some statistics in terms of percentages. But for them, that's, you know, that's very meaningful. meaningful because, you know, every one of the people that are represented in the, you know, 92% that have that issue, that's somebody's son, somebody's daughter, that's somebody who is hoping to, you know, be a fully realized person when they become an adult.
Mm-hmm. And if there are some words of wisdom, some phrases, some slogans, something that can go up around the walls, you just never know who's going to read what at the right moment, and it's going to have a positive impact on their life. So I feel very strongly about those types of messages, like, indeed, be kind. You don't know what kind of battle somebody else is fighting, and look the other way, and don't hold the anger. It's like holding on to a hot cold. You're the one that's getting burned. I might go on and on, but I won't. But there's so many of them out there. One thing that is also, speaking of getting burned, we want to make sure that our listeners are very safe for the holiday season with things like Christmas tree lights and candles late at night. Mm. And if they're doing something with a menorah, making sure that they're being very, very sensitive and very careful to anything with open flames and so on. You want to be very cautious with that. The local fire department is always ready and on hand, but unfortunately, statistically, numbers go up dramatically during this time of season because of electrical fires and issues relating to candles that we're not maybe used to using in our daily lives. Maybe we're celebrating or we have people over. So be aware, be smart, make good choices. Also understand that if you're interested in having a green Christmas this year, green meaning recyclable, reuse, recycle, renew, sort of that commitment to...
You mean that doesn't stop over the holidays?
It doesn't. Okay. Every time I smash the Christmas paper in the garbage can, I'm like, oh my gosh. So after doing some research, there's something that you might not know, and maybe our listeners don't either. There's something called a scrunch test. So if you have Christmas wrap, you want to take the tape off, of course, once you've unwrapped all your presents. Okay. And if you wrap up into a ball a piece of wrapping paper, if it stays crunched up, you can recycle that. If it opens itself back up, it means it either has plastic in it or an unrecyclable kind, or it has some type of foil in it that will not allow it to be safely and easily recycled. So when you ball up the paper after you open the present, if it stays balled up, then you can put it in your recycling bin. And I think that's very cool.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. One more thing I do want to mention, if you're interested in local information about when you can recycle that Christmas tree after the new year and so on, just go to cityofdearborn.org. They do a great job of making sure that all the information is there for you, cityofdearborn.org. And we can't forget our furry friends. There is a Santa Paws. Get
okay.
it? Paws. Adoption event that's taking place tomorrow between noon and 4 o'clock at the Marianne Wright Animal Adoption and Education Center. This is through Metro Detroit Animals, of course, on
the old train
Road.
Station, right?
Yes.
Isn't that
yep.
what that,
mm-hmm. yep.
that's what I've decided
that's,
we're going to call
that's
it.
That's the one, yep. But Santa Paws, it's a great, you know, often they say don't adopt pets during the holidays. It can be an impulse buy kind
sure.
of a thing. But for those of you that are really, you plan this out, you want to do it, and you want to get a pet for whoever, go to this adoption event right here and support the animal shelter and also support the, you know, the need for many of these wonderful little creatures to have a home. So it's tomorrow, noon to 4 on Reckinger Road in Dearborn at the old train station, as you call it.
Indeed. Well, one other thing I want to mention before we wrap up and move on and invite our friends from the Mirror News in, and this doesn't come up until after the holidays, and I know here we are on, December 14th. I can't imagine that it'll be, you know, almost a month before we're back behind the microphones together.
Oh, I know.
But I just want to let people know of an event coming up on January 10th, just at the start of the new year at the Henry Ford, where they will be hosting Pulitzer Prize winning author Doris Kearns Goodwin. She'll be inside the Museum of American Innovation. It's part of a program called Enduring Ideals, Rockwell, Roosevelt, and the Four Freedoms, an internationally touring exhibition organized by the Norman Rockwell Museum, which is open through mid-January. The evening with Doris Kearns Goodwin takes place on January 10th. It can you can find more information about it at thehenryford.org. Opening remarks for the evening take place at 7 o'clock.
Great. So. Everybody that I've talked to that has gone to the Rockwell exhibit has just loved it. So hope to get there myself.
All right, we will be back with more here on this edition of the WHFR Journal. We're going to welcome in some of the editorial staff and the reporters from the Mirror News, which is our student newspaper here at Henry Ford College, which I really have been enjoying working with these students for the few times that we've had them on the air, because I think it's a learning experience for them to be able to learn how, you know, radio works, because technically, you know, in a newspaper, You can edit things as much as you want. Radio, you don't have so much flexibility, right?
You don't. And I'm very grateful to you, Alan, let me just say that publicly, for sort of taking these students under your wing and really enhancing their learning experience. We've wanted to partner with the radio station and the Mirror News for a number of years, and we've done some little things here and there, but it's really coming together nicely. So it's a part of our journalism program as well as our telecommunication program at the college. But when we all can work together and learn good things from each other, it really is a win-win. So kudos to you for making it happen.
Yeah, well, hold those compliments for another like 48 minutes and then tell us what you think when the program's done. It's the WHFR Journal here at 89.3, also online at whfr.fm. Thanks for joining us this Friday afternoon. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
Attention licensed practical nurses. Are you looking for a convenient way to earn your RN degree? Do you need the flexibility of a program who recognizes you for your previous hard work as an LPN? Here's great news. Henry Ford College has exactly what you're looking for with their Advancement LPN to RN Bridge program. You can advance your career and become a licensed registered nurse. Want more info? Give us a call at our School of Health and Human Services at 313-845-9877. That's 313-845-9877.
Welcome back. It's the WHFR Journal. I'm Alan Mazurek, along with Susan McGraw. Thanks for being with us this Friday afternoon. It's been a pretty exciting week here on campus. Well, I guess they're all exciting, but this one in particular, because it's the end of the fall semester here. Everybody is wrapped up their final exams. They're ready to pack up and do what they do over the next few weeks. I'm sure a lot of them will be working at their jobs in order to be able to pay for school and then come back to classes beginning next semester. However, we do want to, before we pack things up and head off for our winter break, bring in our folks and our friends from the Mirror News to talk about things that were in their last issue and a very important issue, which came out, the press date. It came out on the newsstands just a couple of weeks ago, talking about a variety of different topics, including Veterans Services here on the Henry Ford College campus. And to start us in that discussion, we actually bring in somebody who's no stranger to Veterans Services, a veteran himself, Justin Randles, who also happens to be one of the writers, one of the folks who are able to put together the Mirror News. He's the creative editor of the Mirror News, the student newspaper here on campus. Justin, welcome back to our microphones.
Thank you, Alan. And so we're just going to go over a few stories from the Mirror News, and I'm here with my co-host Elias Perry and Josh Bear and Dominic Stankiewicz. And so just let's just go right into it. The Veterans Services story was an investigative piece that I took up to kind of discover what the university was offering us, the veterans out there. So a little bit of background on the story.
That's an essential part of the story is, your story as a veteran, right?
Yeah. So now I am a student veteran. I've been through the ringer. I've been in the combat zones. I feel like maybe not an expert on but a knowledgeable speaker. But some of the things that I learned when doing this story was that 40% of student veterans attend community colleges. And of that 40%, there's a very low graduation rate of 23%, which is pretty abysmal. And there was a study done by the CRCC, which is the Community Resources College Center, Research College Center, from Columbia University, and they have found out a few things, like for example, the inclusion of a student veteran lounge, any community college that brought in a student veteran lounge. So what I'm saying when I talk about a lounge is like a place where veterans can just come, do homework, chill out. Maybe there's a couch, a TV with some sports or something on it. But a place where student veterans can go to and kind of separate themselves, because not that veterans desire to be separated from the student body, but the truth is that student veterans are a very different breed. They're far from a monolithic group. They vary in age, gender, family situations, you know, anything that any other group on a college campus would be locked down to. So what I found out from this, so any community college that included this veteran lounge saw a double in that graduation rate. Okay. So that one simple thing can double the graduation rate of student veterans. So like what I found out, so we here at Henry Ford, we do not have a student veteran lounge, but they do offer services for veterans, like counseling and things like that. They actually pretty robust counseling where you can get up to 8 sessions. The secret is it's not advertised. Like an average veteran probably doesn't know that he could get some counseling right here on campus. And, the counselors are, they're trained in post-traumatic stress disorder. You know, one of the things about veterans that you guys have probably heard is that, according to the most recent polls or research done, is 22 veterans commit suicide a day.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, what do you think, Elias?
So for the counseling staff that's here on campus, the ones that are specified, are there different counselors specific to the rest of the student body here and the veterans? Are those two separate counselors, or are the counseling staff just trained for like all purpose?
So what I found out was that there's a couple of counselors. There's not a specific veteran counselor, no.
Okay.
There doesn't really need to be one, though. Post-traumatic stress disorder can affect anybody. It's not just veterans, but it kind of taken more of a toll on veterans because of the combat experiences. But yeah, so there's two counselors that are trained really well in post-traumatic stress disorder, and then all of them are trained in trauma and handling that type of stuff. I think there's 4 or maybe 5, don't quote me on that, counselors that are available.
So you also said that it's not really advertised that like veterans can go and get counseling staff or can go get help from the counseling staff. For veterans on campus, is there anywhere that they can go to get all this information together so they don't have to like piece it up bit by bit?
To be honest, the story is really the only place where all of that information has been cultivated so far. But the positive of this story has already kind of taken place. There was a meeting with the vice president of the university, and they're in the works to get this lounge kicked into gear. I don't know if that was a direct result from the story or just happened to coincide coincidentally with the story, but their goals are starting to get focused on getting a student veteran lounge.
Do you have any idea when like that time scale is, like when that's supposed to be finished
according to the meeting? They would like to have the place set up and open for operation, which also will employ a couple of student veterans.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's kind of, you get a lot of bonus from it. They're hoping for the end of the spring semester, I believe.
You mentioned in the article that Washtenaw Community College and Schoolcraft already have these veteran lounges. Do you know exactly if Henry Ford is going to go and look and see what they have at theirs and bring the good ideas back and come with some of their own, or is it just going to be an all fresh slate?
No, actually, Gail Bach and Bob John, that's a great question. They've already went to these colleges. They've already looked at what the other colleges are doing to help veterans. And especially Gail Bach and Bob John, they seem particularly motivated to increase the programs here for veterans.
So now, as I'm aware, schools that have special staff there to help veterans actually apply and get into the school get special funding from the government. Mm-hmm. Are you aware here at HFC if that staff is large enough or dedicated enough to actually be able to meet all of the demands of incoming veterans? Because I know at U of M Ann Arbor, there's been a few problems with veterans applying to the school through the special avenues that are provided for veterans and not really getting a response because there's only one staff there to actually help anyone who's coming in. Have you or anyone that you've talked to had any experiences or problems with that here on campus?
You know, I think that Gail Bach, she's the primary point of contact for benefits especially. I think that she works extremely hard to stay on top of it. But I would say, with speaking for her without being authorized to speak for her, I would say that she would probably say that a little more help would go a long way. She is the only person that handles the benefits. And, you know, she's assisted by the other factions of enrollment, mm-hmm. and advising and financial aid. She's assisted by those people. But when it comes to veteran benefits, she is the sole caregiver, so to speak.
Okay.
You mentioned the Student Veterans of America in your piece.
Yeah.
What exactly is the main goal? Like, what do they do for the students, and what does the college do to help connect the students who were veterans to them?
So the SVA, or Student Veterans of America, is students. It's comprised of students. The group is very small. I think that I actually met with the group president, which is Justice. I can't remember his last name at the time, but he's the group president. They have a lot of trouble getting attendance to the meetings, which is, I think, a particular problem that community colleges face just because of the natural ebb and flow of the student body. But they said at times it's grown up to over 20 people, and then, you know, lately they've been struggling to get attendance. However, I will say that I am a part of the SVA mailing list, and I have not heard of a meeting or anything at all this entire, maybe at the beginning, very beginning of the semester, but there just hasn't really been any meeting opportunities.
And so with those lounges, is it just sort of a place to relax, decompress, get away? Or does that also double as the center for where these veterans can actually go and get some of the counseling or some of the added benefits for them?
Some places put them together, but I think the most success that some of the colleges have had is separating the two. A veteran center is where you get your business done. The veteran lounge is where you go to chill and be around, I guess, like minds.
All right. Thanks, Justin, for telling us about this and letting that information be known to many of the veterans here on campus. We'll be right back with more.
Yeah, that's right. Thanks, Elias and Justin, and obviously Dom and Josh as well. It's the WHFR Journal here at 89.3, also online at WHFR.fm. We're always making waves. We'll be back with more in just a moment here on WHFR.
I didn't want to talk. She just sat with me. That was all I really needed.
We got back. One day he called me out of the blue. And it's comforting to know that I always can count on him to have my back.
She called me from time to time. I really didn't think I needed any help.
It took me from being really depressed to feeling like somebody cared to give me some hope. Just that one text.
Be there. Your call. Your presence. Your words. Your support. Be there and help save a life. Learn more about preventing suicide at veteranscrisisline.net.
It's the WHFR Journal. I'm Alan Mazurek. Thanks for being with us this Friday afternoon as we continue with today's edition of the program, as we dig through the pages of the latest edition of the Mirror News here, the Henry Ford College student newspaper, which is published many, many times over the course of the year. And in one of our latest segments, we are bringing in the authors of the stories, the editors of the papers, the folks who are responsible for this publication to give us a little bit more information about their perspectives of what's going on here on campus and what is going on in the world. Mirror News on the Air as part of the WHFR Journal. So let's see. One of the things we want to talk about, we got a few more things we want to talk about during the program today, an opinion piece. And of course, you know, for students, opinion pieces are probably particularly challenging because number one, if you're going to throw facts out there, you want to make sure you got them right. But also you're laying out for the audience your opinion. And as we always say on the WHFR Journal, the views and opinions expressed on the program are not necessarily those of WHFR, its staff, its management, or in this case, even the management of the Mirror News. But when it comes to opinion pieces, it becomes, kind of a difficult thing for students to put across. And in this case, we had an opinion piece in the latest edition of the Mirror News called Family Separation and the Caravan. And we know what we mean when we say the caravan. Trump's history with immigration. Justin Randles from the Mirror News, why don't you start to let us know what you've seen as you read this, and then we'll bring the author of the piece into the discussion.
Absolutely. So this opinion piece is really geared towards, it's very topical. I mean, things are happening almost every day in the news when it comes to the family separation, the caravan, and just Trump in general with immigration. So, Elias, why don't you tell us a little bit about this piece?
Yeah, for sure. Well, as it stands now, there is a caravan of migrants moving across Central America, moving up towards the United States. Now, Trump, in his many displays on television, has said that this is an invasion. The caravan is invading the United States, when in reality, they're just refugees fleeing their country. Now, many of these many of the people in the caravan are actually asylum seekers. Now, asylum seekers are people who are fleeing their country to seek asylum in a foreign country, which means to seek protection, to seek shelter in another country because there's problems happening back home. For many of them, it's the cartel, it's unstable political climates, it's all-around conflict within their homes. There's a few thousand of them are moving up right now from Central America up to the United States.
Okay, so when you were putting this piece together, what are some of the things that you discovered that Trump is doing, maybe even including the rhetoric of saying invasion and occupying the military, putting them down on the border? Is this all positioning to just get this wall built, or is it rhetoric to inflame his base? Like, what do you think the end result here is? That,
well, yeah, Justin, as you said, the president has sent military personnel down to the border to meet the caravan as they come. And really, this is just another in a long line of Donald Trump's steps to paint immigrants and paint mostly immigrants from places in Latin America as negative towards the country, as an invading force, as bad for the country. I mean, we all remember his famous statement about Mexicans prior to the elections. For Donald Trump, I believe that this is about rallying his base, that core base that rallies behind him when he says strongman things like, oh, there's an invasion at the border, we need to send out all of our troops to go and repel this threat. And one of the things that Donald Trump's been saying a lot recently is that many of these asylum seekers are going to enter the country legally, and we need to throw them back because they need to do it legally. They need to seek asylum legally in the United States. Well, it's actually not true. If you come into the country illegally, you can seek asylum. The only way to seek asylum is to seek asylum on United States soil. There's been a number of Trump's advocates that have been saying, oh, why don't you just do it at your own country? Go to an embassy and seek asylum. Legally, you can't do that.
according to the United States Constitution as well as international treaty, the only way for a an individual to seek asylum in another country is to go there onto that country's soil and seek asylum. And those who enter the country illegally can't be prosecuted as long as they're seeking asylum.
Okay.
For many people who are coming into the country, they have no other choice but to cross the border and then seek asylum. In addition, one of the reoccurring themes is family separation.
Yeah.
Now, for those who aren't aware, earlier in the year, Donald Trump and his administration passed what they call the zero tolerance policy. So people at the border who crossed illegally would have their families separated, so the children taken away from the parents while the parents were awaiting trial for crossing the border illegally. Now, just as a, like, many people don't understand that crossing the border illegally is a misdemeanor offense. So if you cross the border illegally, for most first-time offenders, nothing happens.
Okay.
You just are sent back. You're deported back to wherever you came from. For many of the people during the whole family separation crisis who did have their families separated and who were tried for crossing the border were served with time served. So the amount of time they spent in jail waiting trial was what their sentence was. So they got to leave as soon as they were done. But the Trump administration has resorted to very, very drastic actions to separate children from their families, many of which still have not been reunited with families who were released.
Okay. Some 2,000 unattached children right now.
Yes.
Right? Something like that.
Still caught in the system who no one knows where their families are. No one knows who they belong to. And as horrifying as that is, it being months and months after that policy was ended, the Donald Trump administration is seeking to reinstate that when the migrant caravan crosses the border again.
You mentioned in your story about Trump suddenly being interested in birthright citizenship. Can you give everybody a little bit of a what it is and why Trump is now all of a sudden interested in it?
Yeah, for sure. So birthright citizenship is the right to citizenship for people who are born in the United States. Now, that doesn't mean if your family are United States citizens and have been living in Wisconsin for like 10 generations and you're now born, that's a different case entirely. This is specifically for people born to immigrant parents who are not American citizens, who come here, have you as a child. Since you are born on American soil, you're instantly recognized as an American citizen. Now, what Donald Trump hopes to do is, in an interview, he said that he wants to eliminate birthright citizenship with an executive order. Now, birthright citizenship is an integral part of the Constitution, so that's not possible. But the fact that he's toying around with the idea of removing birthright citizenship is concerning. Now, the reason why he's going after birthright citizenship specifically right now, when we're in the midst of this whole caravan problem, is because a lot of illegal immigrants have come to the United States and had children on American soil, and those kids are now recognized as American citizens. So you can't deport them, mm-hmm. and often cases they won't deport the families, because then, again, you're separating the children from their family, and that will cause a whole mess of problems there. So this is just another step for him to sort of go after immigrants again, identifying a problem that he has with the way immigrants function in our country, and tear down the entire system that protects a lot more than just illegal immigrants.
Well, thank you, Elias, for your thoughts and for writing the story and presenting it here on the news.
Yeah, it's my pleasure writing it.
It's the WHFR Journal here at 89.3, also online at WHFR.FM. We appreciate everybody from the Mirror News helping us make waves today, and indeed, we still have another topic to discuss, and this one less on the political side and more on the artistic side, an article written by Justin Randles, who is with us in the studio, regarding the Wasserman Projects. Elias, Josh, Dom, why don't you sort of grill him about what this one is all about.
So, an art project centered in the middle of Detroit about breeding chickens. How does that
work? Whoa, wait,
work?
Hang on. I just have to jump in and say, okay, let's explain that one. Just say what you said one more time. All right. Okay. And then we can discuss it.
So an art project centered in Detroit about breeding chickens. Give us a little bit of insight on how that works and what the Wasserman Project really is.
Okay. Well, the Wasserman Project is an art gallery / museum. It's there to, like, it's supposed to be inclusive of all walks of life, whereas you walk into a gallery, a typical gallery, it's a little stuffy. But their first, when the Wasserman Project opened, their first project was the Cosmopolitan Chicken Project.
Okay.
And this was executed by Belgium artist Cohen van Mechelen. And it's an examination of biocultural diversity. And the goal is, so the Cosmopolitan Chicken is like this super high-end chicken, like $300 a pound for chicken breast. It's a French chicken. And the Belgium artists, so a little bit about the history there. The French and the Belgium don't really get along. The Belgians don't really get along very well. The French have, like, they think of the Belgians as lesser than them. So this Belgium artist went on this mission to take this very fancy top-of-the-line chicken, the Cosmopolitan Chicken, and crossbreed it over and over and over again. And the goal is that the Cosmopolitan Chicken will end up having all of the world's chickens' genes within. And it's done, I think, 12 different countries so far. And the result so far has been a chicken that is healthier, more disease immune. And it's kind of a note to society, like, you know, spreading the love, so to speak, makes us a stronger humanity, I suppose.
So these chickens are healthier than most chickens. Is that because of just a more varied genetics, so that they're less inbred, they're more able to resist different bacteria or different illnesses?
That's exactly what it is. Their breeding line goes outside of just the Cosmopolitan Chicken, and the very first chicken it was bred with was the Belgian chicken, like their country's chicken. Actually, you can get the eggs, like, so they don't sell the meat here from the Cosmopolitan Chicken Project in Detroit, but you can buy the eggs from the chickens at Eastern Market.
You mentioned that other countries were able to build this, or to breed, I should say, this chicken from all over the world. Here in Detroit, has it gotten to that stage where it's already been bred with all the different chickens in the world, or are they still working on that?
Yeah, the chicken that Cohen van Mechelen brought over is his line of chickens lives here in Detroit. Mm-hmm. Like, it does not, this project isn't going on anywhere else. It's,
oh, okay.
It was brought here for the Wasserman Project's first art exhibit and has stayed here. There's a little a farm in Detroit, Oakland Community Farms, where the chickens, I'm sure there's multiple of them, now stay, and they lay their eggs, and they have a free roaming experience, and, you know, all the hipster talk when it comes to food and stuff like that.
So are these galleries open up to the public? Is it cheap to be able to go and visit the different artworks? Or is this like a top-of-the-line expensive actual gallery?
That's a great question. It actually is an anti-gallery gallery. You know, what they're going for. So the art is still expensive. It's still going
to
cost a lot of money.
But
anybody can go in there, can soak up the culture, can appreciate the art, and be a part of it. And that's where they kind of get their museum / gallery self-description from. So pretty much anybody can go in there, you know, and enjoy the art. And Marella Zacharias, the other artist that was on display who did the sculpture work, her stuff is incorporated from the Diego Rivera muralist, who did all, like, the murals in the Fisher Building, the DIA. So this is her own take And in one of those Diego Rivera murals is the Aztec goddess Cuitlicue, who is the feminine god of growth, destruction, and regrowth, which, you know, is kind of why they brought Zacharias's exhibit here to Detroit, because where better to display? I mean, not only is Cuitlicue already displayed in the she's represented as a piece of the assembly line in the Fisher Building mural, or not the Fisher, but the DIA mural. And what better place to bring that than to Detroit, where we're going through this growth, destruction, and regrowth process right now.
So where can our listeners go to find this art?
So this display is only on for a couple more days.
Yeah, I was going to say, today till 5 o'clock, tomorrow from 11 until 5.
Yep.
But where at?
It's at the Wasserman Project. It's downtown, right at the end of Eastern Market.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the old firehouse right there at Mac and Russell.
Yes, it correct. Is. Yeah. It's in a rejuvenation.
So I think it's technically on Russell Street, but right around Mac Avenue.
Yep, Mac.
So it's open till 5 o'clock today. It's open tomorrow from 11 until 5. And that's where these exhibitions are going to be displayed, or are being displayed, right?
Yes. Yep.
All right, thanks. That's going to wrap up this particular segment. We're going to be back to talk sports with Josh and Dom a little bit on this edition of the WHFR Journal. Justin and Ilias, we appreciate you being with us for the program today, and we will be back with more in just a moment here on 89.3.
If you're a single man under the age of 35, you'd probably like to know what the ladies are looking for on an online dating site. A guy who had a few drinks and later got pulled over for buzz driving. See, that could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. And doesn't a guy who's back living with his parents but calls them my roommates just scream, Mr. Right?
Buzzed, busted, and broke. Because buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. It's the WHFR Journal. I'm Alan Mazurek. Thanks for being with us this Friday afternoon as we continue with our Mirror News presentation here on the WHFR Journal. And we turn to a different topic other than news and topics and things that are going on here on campus. Well, actually, some of these are going on campus. We go into our sports segment and we welcome back Josh Hebert to sort of captain. We're going to name you captain of the team. But a team involves a lot of help, obviously, and I'll let you take it away and talk about sports.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you, Susan, for having us back once again. And I'm pleased to be joined by my cohort and assistant captain in crime, Dominic Stankiewicz, who is also a roller hockey player here on campus. But before we actually get into roller hockey, we do have to wrap up the volleyball season that happened this year. We don't have Emily with us today, which is sad, but finals week does do that to some of us here. But the volleyball team did finish off on a strong note, making the playoffs. They did get bounced, however, in the first round by Cuyahoga. Thank you.
Yep.
Great season for them. Second year back as a varsity sport. All the momentum is going upward from here on out. I mean, yeah, getting bounced in the first round isn't a pleasure. Dom, I mean, you play roller hockey. You guys made the playoffs last year.
Yeah.
Just going a little bit about how they might be feeling right now.
Getting bounced in the first round obviously is not fun. I think at the start of the season, I don't think they really thought that they were going to make the playoffs. But, you know, they kind of overcame the adversity that, you know, everyone thought. They're not the greatest team in the world. They're gonna, you know, they're not gonna make playoffs. But at the end of the day, you know, they made playoffs. Yeah, they lost in the first round, but like they're moving a step up every season. I don't know if they had the greatest season last year, but I know talking to Emily and having her on here, you know, they're kind of progressing forward to like have a better season every year that they're here. I mean, for us in roller hockey last year, like our first season was, I mean, it was great. I couldn't ask for anything better. We made it to the finals and lost in the finals. So, like, I can't complain
on how we did. It's kind of disappointing to, you know, lose in the finals, but I mean, you can't be mad. I mean, you make the playoffs. It's not every team makes it, so you always got to be humble that you made it and had the opportunity to play for a championship. So
yeah, and that's a great point. They were able to make it there.
Yeah.
There's not many teams that can say they made it to the playoffs, and especially not many teams can say they made it to the playoffs within the first 5 years of being a program.
Yeah, exactly.
Jumping over into roller hockey before we get into basketball here, how has your guys' season been so far down?
It's definitely been a struggle the first half. So what did we have? We had Pennsylvania, and we had one Michigan tournament and then an Ohio tournament. The first tournament in Pennsylvania wasn't the greatest, but I mean, you can't complain. It was our first real tournament as a team, and we were kind of getting the pregame jitters out. So, I mean, I'm not going to complain about it. The JCC tournament, on the other hand, a terrible start. I know we got thrashed the first game against Miami, and then from there we took on DePaul and Michigan Tech, which were like two easy teams, you know, to take on. But then we took an L against Michigan State, 4-1. It was like 6-1 or 4-1. I don't remember it, but I mean, it's not a big gap. But we're slowly progressing towards becoming a better team. You could tell from actually the Ohio tournament where we took on Western in Grand Valley and Michigan State D1, which the scores weren't completely out of hand for the last two games for Michigan State and Western, but Grand Valley we got thrashed by them too. But yeah, we're progressing forward and getting better every day. So
what do you look for as this not many people know you were one of the driving forces in getting the team here started.
Yeah.
How do you feel having a second year under your belt, having the support of the athletic department, how do you feel about just everything in general for the roller hockey team going forward the rest of this season?
Going forward, it's obviously going to be great. I know, like you said, the support from our athletic director, Rochelle, is just outstanding. You know, she's supporting us with some travel, you know, expenses, so that's always a plus, because obviously we don't want to spend, you know, $1,000 on travel per person, because, you know, at the end of the day it hurts the pocket. But yeah, like overall she's just been great. It's always a great feeling when you have the support of an athletic department and you know that you don't always have to pay for everything and that she's gonna take care of us as seasons progress forward. But as for next year, we really don't know what, you know, it's gonna hold. Maybe we won't have a team, maybe we will. Like, I know I don't know if I'll be here for this season, and then same with some other guys are graduating, so we don't know if we're gonna have a season, but we're definitely gonna recruit through the summer and hope to God, you know, continue the program, because it's been, you know, kind of successful. So
can you just give us a little bit of a emphasis on what your guys' record is, where you guys are standing right now inside of your division?
So Division Two, we had a whole restructuring program for this season, so most of the D1 teams dropped down to Division 2, so they're playing with us. We're currently standing 2-4-1, so we're at the bottom of the barrel right now. We're last place, right behind Western, so it's, like I said, it's not great to be last, but we have a way tougher division this year than we had last year, so I think this regular season is going to get us ready for nationals. So we're going to keep on trucking along. You know, if we don't win a game, it's okay. We're still developing as a team. You know, we're having fun with it. So that's really all. That's what it's about, having fun.
Okay. I know Christmas is coming up, the new year. When is the next time you guys take the floor, per se?
I think mid-January we're actually going back to Pittsburgh. And we're going to actually take on some harder teams than we did the first time we were there. So we're going to take on some big schools in roller hockey. So Lindenwood and Farmingdale, the two top teams in roller hockey for college. So that's going to be definitely a fun time.
Hey, well, Dom, good luck with roller hockey the Thank second you. Half of the season.
Yep.
We now jump over to women's basketball. First year back as a program. I know you've had a chance to talk to Coach Burton earlier this year. I've had a chance to talk to her. the women's basketball team right now, she described it as still going good, still learning, but they are 0-4 right now. Yeah. First year back as a program. Not easy going with all freshmen.
Yeah, it's definitely tough.
So there is a little bit of a learning curve for them, but I do have faith. They are starting to show a little bit of a turnaround from the first game to now. They're getting ready to go to New York this weekend, actually. Play a team that they've already played this season here at home. They go on the road to their place. Have a good chance of turning it around starting this weekend.
Yeah.
What did you get out of the conversation you had with Coach Burton earlier in the year?
Honestly, you kind of touched on it already. Like, they're doing good, and like, dude, it's when you have a first year program coming, or I wouldn't say a first year program, but when it's coming back, and you have strictly freshmen on the roster. I don't know if it's strictly freshmen or not. It is. But okay, so you have strictly freshmen on the roster. They have no college basketball experience. They have high school basketball or some travel league that they played in high school because they didn't want to play high school. It's literally all about learning, like, fundamentals at this point. Like, that's what we did for Henry Ford. It's, like, learning fundamentals of the game, like, slowing it down. It's just learning. You know, you're not going to have a perfect season, like, coming back. Like, with freshman players, it's going to be tough for them to adapt to on the skill level of a college season. So I think just what she was saying, just keep pushing forward. They're going to keep getting better and better, and then they're eventually going to have a turnaround. So yeah. They turn around, get a few wins. Like, even if they don't break 10 wins in the season, as long as you get one, you have a successful season. You're not going, you know, 0-1 however many games they play. Yeah. So,
and that turnaround is going to start with freshman guard Mariah Mitchell. She's started all four games for the team, averaging 24 points a game early in the season.
Yeah.
So she's going to be a big driving force in the upcoming weeks and upcoming games that the team has.
Yeah, for sure. She's definitely, those points are just going to keep on getting higher and higher as the season progresses. So it's clutch.
It is. And jumping over to the men's basketball team, started out 0-2. Not easy. Second year head coach and coach Chris Shepherd, the team has turned it around since. They've went on a 6-game winning streak. They are also heading to New York this weekend, taking on Niagara County, same team they played earlier this season. Beat them by 18. This time it's in their backyard. They have two games, back-to-back days this weekend. Back-to-back, I know from coaching basketball in the past, not easy thing to do.
Yeah.
But I know some of the guys on the team, they are just pushing forward, going all out. They've been doing great so far. They've done great turning it around. They're just outside of the top 20 again this week. Started outside of it. Last week were outside of it. They're pushing their way up. What do you have to say about if you've talked to any of the guys on the team?
I haven't talked to any of the guys on the team, but from reading your article, like, only 3 players returned from last year. So you have, like, pretty much a whole new roster. So, dude, it's a complete grind. You know, it's grinding to, you know, get to that top 20. Even if you're outside of it by just a little bit, you know, that's always a plus. You know, like I keep saying, it's literally a grind. Like, throughout the whole season, even if you're losing, you know, a ton of games in a row, you still got to, like, push yourself to become better and better to get to that top 20 spot, you know? Even if you're last, like, 20, like, that's not even bad. You can't complain about it. So you just got to keep, you know, grinding forward, and, you know, getting a few wins here and there is always going to be a plus, and then make playoffs, so.
Yeah. Well, I'm being told that's all the time we have. However, before we do wrap up, the basketball teams both return home on January 3rd, so you have to wait a little bit, when they both play Alpena. 7:30 for the guys, 5 o'clock for the ladies, here on campus in the gymnasium.
I'll be here.
I will be too.
There we go.
Thank you guys for listening. Hope you guys have a Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. Alan?
Josh, Tom, thanks so much for being with us and telling us what's going on in the sports world here at HFC. We appreciate your contributions throughout 2018, and we look forward to seeing you again in 2019. And go Hawks, right?
Yeah, go Hawks. Here we go.
All right. I like it. Thanks so much. And thanks to you, our listeners, for joining us for the WHFR Journal this Friday afternoon. I'm Alan Mazurek, along with Susan McGraw. It is always great to spend time with you on these Friday afternoons. We appreciate you listening. We appreciate your support. And we, again, always enjoy making waves.
This is DJ Show from Soundtrack City, wishing WHFR, the station known for making waves, happy birthday.
You know how doctors recommend a daily diet of 5 food groups? Veggies, fruits, grains, dairy, and protein? Well, I have one more to add to that list. Rock and roll. Hey, I'm DJ Chelsea Marie. Join me every Saturday from 4 to 6 p.m. for Dinner with Chelsea, where I will serve up a generous portion of rock, post-hardcore, and metal music, all spun right here on WHFR. It's dinner music with a kick. So join me every Saturday night from 4 to 6 p.m. for Dinner with Chelsea right here on 89.3 FM WHFR Dearborn.
Listeners supported, non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn.
South of Memphis, Tennessee.